Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. It's February 7th, 2018, and, well, I thought this was going to be kind of a start to the off-season. Very chill, nothing really going on. And then the Josh McDaniels news broke yesterday. The NFL had about one day off before we got back into all kinds of Patriots-related drama. And so, of course, when that happened, I thought, well, who should I call? It is the person who has worked so many extra weeks over the last 20 years covering the Patriots, Mr. Playoffs, Mr. Overtime himself. Mike Reese is joining us. Mike, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. Thanks, as always, for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And I have to say, I'll start with this. What were the chances that you thought you'd be sitting here Wednesday afternoon talking about Josh McDaniels coming back to the Patriots?
Oh, I would say 0%. It seemed like, and you know, Bill, there were rumors at the Super Bowl, you know, that maybe it wasn't as sure of a thing. And, you know, I felt pretty certain that he was going there. And I think now that as we look back on it, the one final piece was, could the Patriots sway him? You know, he had to have that final conversation with Bill Belichick and Robert and Jonathan Kraft. And, you know, to me, that was like the standard exit interview, like, thanks for all you've done. You know, maybe we'll meet up down the road. Best of luck. What caught me by surprise was the Patriots being as aggressive as they were, Bill, to say, hey, is there anything we can do here? Because we're willing to step up with some pretty significant things here if you'd consider changing your mind.
So, I mean, it there's the obvious sort of reaction to this, which is, number one, that they backed up a Brinks truck and gave him an enormous, staggering amount of money, or possibility two, that he was promised the chance to eventually, whether sooner or later, take over from Bill Belichick as head coach of the Patriots. So do you buy either of those possibilities? Do you weigh one more than the other in terms of thinking why McDaniels came back?
So I would take the second. If I had to just choose those two, Bill, I would take the second choice, the idea of ultimately, you know, staying in New England whenever Bill Belichick decides to retire. But I can tell you that there were no assurances, you know, given to him that that's going to be the case. But what I think is significant here is in these discussions that happened on Tuesday, Bill Belichick said to Josh McDaniels, as I understand it, I would create a situation where I will take my mentorship with you to a higher level. I want to include you in the inner workings of what we do with the Patriots. So how we make decisions with roster building, how we make decisions on the salary cap, what we're thinking with how we make decisions from both the macro and the micro levels. And my understanding, Bill, is that, you know, that's when Josh McDaniels' ears sort of perked up a little bit to say, wait a minute, you're telling me I'm 41 years old. I hope to coach for another 20, 25 years. You're 65 years old. You're going to be 66. You might be the best coach of all time, and you're going to open your world to me and take this to a higher level. You know, my understanding, that was very appealing to Josh McDaniels, coupled with not necessarily the Brinks truck, Bill, but more the long-term commitment, the idea of, look, this is how strongly we feel about you. We're willing to go this long and consider for your 12-year-old, your 10-year-old, your 6-year-old, your 3-year-old at home, with us being willing to make this long-term vision, this long-term commitment, like they might be able to stay in the same schools, you know, their entire youth, which in coaching is very rare. So I think those were the dynamics in play.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think, you know, at least in some people's heads, in my head, I think there was already kind of a perception that, hey, it seemed plausible that Josh McDaniels might eventually take over for Bill Belichick. It seemed like if you had to pick any candidate to take over, he would be that guy. But obviously, it seems like it took an enormous leap forward in terms of what you mentioned in terms of Belichick's mentorship. And, of course, you look back at history, you wouldn't want to say that the coaches who have left the Patriots and gone to be head coaches elsewhere are bad coaches, but they haven't had much success as head coaches elsewhere. They haven't necessarily taken all the things that worked in New England and been able to succeed elsewhere. So I guess it's intriguing to see, you know, if this changes the likelihood of Josh McDaniels succeeding as a head coach a second time around, and presumably that will now be with the New England Patriots.
You know, that is interesting, Bill, on two fronts, because if it isn't with the New England Patriots, we're probably talking about another decade, right? Because if you're looking for a head coach within the next couple years, I mean, you're probably staying away from him, right? I mean, this is going to leave a mark for him, you know, the way this unfolded. So it could help him, but let's also talk about this. I mean, would you want to be the coach to replace Bill Belichick?
Right.
Like that, I mean, Bill, that to me, that might be the hardest, most difficult job in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I find sort of fascinating here is what has Josh McDaniels learned, or, you know, how has his perspective been altered based on, one, his prior experience as a head coach in Denver, and two, based on the interviews that he's had in recent years. And I almost wonder if he's changed the perspective of saying, you know, I would never want to really replace Bill because that's a tough spot to be. Mm-hmm. And maybe now it is, geez, after all these jobs I've interviewed for or I've held or I've looked at, maybe none of them are perfect. There's always going to be a mark on, you know, all of them. And maybe just being in the same place trumps everything. And you know, he's a very, very devoted to his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost wonder if that's the shift that maybe has happened in his mind.
That's really interesting. You know, it does make sense, right? You know, obviously there is no perfect job out there. You're never going to get that job that has the great cap situation and the franchise quarterback making no money and great defense, great offensive line. It just doesn't happen. So it does make sense that that would be something that would play into his favor. There is this perception, I think, now, though, that, you know, obviously his first head coaching experience in Denver was difficult. It did not go well. There was the hot start, but of course they traded Jay Cutler, so he alienated his starting quarterback. There was a lot of dissension within the organization, ended up with him being ousted pretty quickly from an organization that had a long track record of giving coaches plenty of time to succeed. So in terms of McDaniel's reputation, I mean, obviously this doesn't seem to help him, but do you think this limits him at this point to only being the coach of the Patriots? You know, if something changed in New England and he was not given the job, do you think he would struggle to find a coaching job elsewhere?
I do, Bill. And I think especially at this point, you know, to me, this is one of those situations where if he wants to coach in the NFL again somewhere else, to me, it's almost like a minimum 5-year grace period,
right?
Like almost, you know, similar to how it ended in Denver. You know, when he left Denver, you know, he wasn't going to be a head coach somewhere else. It was going to take some time. So he sort of built himself back up. I think it's going to be a similar process for him to have to sort of remove himself from the way this unfolded. Because look, and I'm sure this has happened to a lot of people. When this went down, you know, you get some messages from coaches around the league and people around the league that, you know, one of them, I will tell you, said to me like, "Wow, you're going pretty easy, you know, on this guy, you know." And it's almost, you know, it's not the way it went down. It's not viewed by many. I shouldn't say many because I can't take that poll. But you know, there's a certain section of the coaching community, Bill, that, you know, looks at that and says, "Wow, that's a tough thing that he did," you know, to that organization and to other coaches. And I think what Josh would probably say in return to that is, "Look, I didn't have all the information. Like, the Patriots came to me at this last minute with this, you know, with this dynamic that I didn't even know was available to me. And I owed it to, you know, my family to seriously consider that." Now, had the Patriots done that a couple months ago, you know, it's possible he wouldn't even have interviewed for some of these jobs. So you can see where everyone is sort of coming from on these dynamics. But I sort of took the long road to get there. I think there will be some damage to him, you know, around the league in terms of his candidacy, at least in the coming years. And then, you know, see where it is 5 years from now. Maybe the picture changes.
Now, of course, I think I would be remiss if I didn't point out the similarities here to a guy who happens to be very close to Josh McDaniels, and Bill Belichick, who his first coaching job in Cleveland ended extremely poorly. And you read the reports after he left Cleveland, and it was basically saying, hey, he's never going to be a head coach again. He's a pariah. He doesn't handle interpersonal situations at all. He was terrible with the media and the fans. I mean, it was about as bad of a reputation as you could get. And of course, Belichick built up his reputation again. He got that second coaching opportunity with the Jets and then decided not to do it and moved on. So do you think, to some extent, Belichick sees a stubbornness to doing the thing that's the best opportunity for him that he maybe empathizes with in McDaniels? Or is it just sort of a coincidence that they followed relatively similar career paths?
That's a great question, and I really wish I knew the definitive answer to it. What I could envision is in these discussions over the last couple of days, Bill Belichick saying to Josh McDaniels, look, in the year 2000, when all this stuff was going down and I resigned as the HC of the NYJ, you know, it was a tough decade for my family. You know, I was in New York, then I was in Cleveland, and then I was in New England, and then I was back in New York with the Jets. Like, to me, what I've built, and I'm talking in Bill Belichick's voice here, over the last 18 years in New England, you know, that means a lot to me to be able to have that stability and to be able to provide that stability to the coaches that work for me. So I don't know if I'm answering the question, Bill, but I think he might see some similarities in just sharing that with Josh McDaniels and Josh listening to Bill Belichick and saying, you know what, that same stability is important to me. And well, you know, I thought this was the right move for me. Now that I think of it, and now that I know the way you feel about me, and you're willing to open this world to me and sort of take this mentorship to a new level, I could envision, you know, I think that sold Josh in a big way to ultimately change his mind.
Now, naturally, after it happened, after we sort of had that, you know, story come out that it seemed like one of the reasons that Josh McDaniels is coming to work for the Patriots, or coming back to work for the Patriots, I should say. The idea was that he was going to eventually take over for Bill Belichick. And then the next question was, well, when is Bill Belichick going to leave this job? So do you think the McDaniels decision changes your perception of how many years Bill Belichick has left in this job? Or do you think even at this point, Bill Belichick knows how long he's planning on staying in this job?
I have an interesting sort of thought here, I think, Bill, on this one, because when you hear that McDaniels is staying, the first instinct is probably, uh-oh, you know, if you're a Patriots follower, what does this mean for Bill?
Right.
You know, could he be thinking that it's one more year? I'm going to make the contrarian case. I actually think McDaniels coming back might extend the window for Belichick.
Really?
Because, yes, Bill, because his job just got a lot easier. You are just keeping a coach who's of head coach caliber, who runs the offense. Like, you watch the team on game day, even right to the Super Bowl, and it's basically Josh McDaniels running the offense, and while Matt Patricia ran the defense, it often to me seemed like Bill Belichick was spending a lot more time on that side of the ball, flipping through those film pictures, and I think Belichick was going to have a very tough time in 2018, trying to replace both McDaniels and Matt Patricia, maybe even special teams coach Joe Judge. Yeah. But the fact that McDaniels stays, I would argue, actually makes Belichick's job easier and might make it more inclined for him to say, you know what, I'm 66. I can do another 2-3 years with this arrangement, where without McDaniels, maybe the strain of that and trying to recharge and reboot, maybe it would have been too much.
That does make sense. I mean, obviously, you know, if you look at the Patriots heading into the Super Bowl and where they struggled and what the season was like, the defense was the problem here. It wasn't the offense. The offense was great. So you would figure if Bill Belichick's going to focus on anything, he's naturally a defensive coach. And, of course, the defense is sort of the thing the Patriots need to work on to make a trip back to the Super Bowl and perhaps this time actually pull out a victory. So, Mike, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people check out more of your thoughts on this and everything Patriots related?
Well, so we have the ESPN.com Patriots page, and then I usually try to tweet all the links on Twitter. It's just my name, at Mike Reiss, R-E-I-S-S.
Thanks so much, Mike.
All right, thanks for having me, Bill.
All right, thanks so much to Mike Reiss. We're going to hit a break here and come back with Chris Sproul of ESPN talking about some of our preseason props from earlier in the year and just checking how they did over the course of a very interesting NFL season. Back in a second. But first, guys, I have to admit, when I got the copy for the ZipRecruiter ad today, normally I think about what I'm going to talk about. This one seems real simple, especially given what we just talked about with Mike Reese. The Colts should have used ZipRecruiter. I can't make this any simpler. It's an obvious bit. I almost feel embarrassed that it's so obvious. But if they had used ZipRecruiter, they would have ended up with a much better candidate than Josh McDaniels. Because ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. They can't force the person you offer the job to just take the job after they say yes. But I have to admit, I have never heard from someone who used ZipRecruiter and said they hired someone and then they just backed out and changed their mind hours later. It's never happened, I believe, in the history of ZipRecruiter. You can check with them. But again, I think they are going to help you find the right candidate for your job instead of the right candidate to get a promotion at their current job, because 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate. And I think you know what that means. Through the site in just one day. They spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you're never going to miss a great match. You're never going to overlook that Coach of the Year candidate so you can hire a coach who doesn't want to come coach for your football team. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. F-R-E-E, $0.00. You don't have to pay to interview that candidate three times. And then have them not take your job. You can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, and post your job on ZipRecruiter for free. $0.00. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Joining me now, NFL editor? What's your official title at ESPN?
Assistant to the stars.
Assistant to the stars. Like
such as yourself.
Oh, I was going to say Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, but assistant to the mediocrities at ESPN as well. Chris Sprow is here. Talk about some of the preseason props we made before the year. Now, Chris, I went and listened to that podcast last night, or two episodes of the Nickel Package where we recorded them. I will say, number one, very solid shows. I don't regret listening to them. A solid couple hours I put in there. Number two, I know you don't remember what you picked for each side. So not only are we going to go over what the bets were and how they did, but we're also going to see if you remember which side you took in advance.
So I have, This is like a psychology test. Does my hindsight bias overcome, you know, my memory?
Exactly. So, some of them I feel like are pretty easy, and some of them, at least I got some of them extremely wrong. So I'm not there. There's no shame.
Impossible.
In this. I will tell you, you won. You got more correct between the two of us. So, you have nothing to be ashamed of. I'm the one who should be ashamed of how I performed, and I will start with our easiest one, the simplest one, and I'll go over the simple rules for how the props work in case you are an unfamiliar listener. Le'Veon Bell. The prop was Le'Veon Bell over or under 1,999.5 yards from scrimmage. Chris, what do you think you picked?
I think I expressed some concerns about his usage. Mm-hmm. As you had rightfully pointed out, Le'Veon Bell has not been a healthy playoff player ever, really, in his career. He mm-hmm. was this year. I think I took the over, but expressed some concerns just about his health, which he's an NFL running back. Yeah, I know that's really original of me. That was a theme. I thought it pertained to his usage. I thought maybe they would take it a little bit easy on him during the season, thinking he might be around in January, and mm-hmm. suspecting that was a Super Bowl contender. I think they were until they ran into the mighty Jags.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said they were going to give James Conner a bigger role, and you took the under. So you got that one trick, because he hit 1,946 yards from scrimmage in 15 games. So I took the over. I think I said it was basically a lock if he played a full season that he'd get 2,000 yards from scrimmage, and he did not. So that did not work out super well. So 1-0 for you so far.
1-0 for me.
Yes.
Hey, Bill, follow-up, though.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a lock that they should bring him back? James Conner obviously didn't see much of the field this season. I think he had like 32 attempts. I see it now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure seems like this is still Bell's job if he wants it.
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what they do. I don't know what they should do. I don't know if it's – they got probably a 90th percentile season in terms of health from Le'Veon Bell, or 95th percentile
right.
health. So I don't know. Do you want to pay him like that, expecting that you're going to get him back at that rate for the next 3 years? I'm skeptical. I don't know.
His health was actually a quandary in terms of their negotiating. I think, from what I'm hearing, I don't think they are 100% certain either way either. So
we will see. Fascinating offseason to come with those running backs. This is fun. That seems embarrassing in hindsight. Jared Goff, passing touchdowns, -4.5. Jared Goff, interceptions.
Oh, man. I feel like now I really have some bias. I feel like I said McVay did a masterful job of limiting Kirk Cousins' interceptions.
Did.
That was true.
Nailed it.
And that Jared Goff, they would find a way, even if he only threw 13 TDs mm-hmm. and 7 picks. I did think they had his picks way down. I need to look up. I don't even know how many. I know the ratio is pretty damn good, though.
Yeah, it was 28-7 was the actual ratio, so it's not especially
Which is
close.
Weird because Kirk Cousins, McVay got him into the 7 range. I don't have it in front of me, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You said 16-11, so you said the passing touchdowns would take it, and I said the picks would take it, so you're 2-0.
Can we stop the show now?
0-2. You win. I already spoiled that part of it. You win in the long run, so it gets worse for both of us very shortly. We start losing a lot.
Well, like that's saying. I mean, we have a producer here. Let's cut it. 2-0.
The funny thing is
I'm 2-0 and I'm only 1-1 in recalling if I was even right.
Yes, that's the other. You versus yourself at the same time as well. So next one.
And we wrote these props and we still can't remember.
Our book wrote these props. What about over under 2.5 300-plus carry running backs in 2017?
I think under. I'm a big seller on volume at that position.
Mm-hmm. You said hard under.
Hard under.
Hard under. And there was only one. It was Le'Veon Bell. I also said under. I will say, I said Todd Gurley had a reasonable shot at 300. He got to 279, but had a better season than I think anyone's expecting. I also said Isaiah Crowell had a shot at 300, and that did not come quite as close.
Well, the vaunted Cleveland passing attack didn't exactly keep defenders out of the box this year, Bill. I'll give you a pass there.
We'll get to Cleveland a little later. We have some Cleveland props coming up on this one, including, I would say, the saddest prop. the saddest player prop in the history of props is coming up later on in
just,
the show.
Just to cap that one, Bill, though, I guess we were both right on it. So the mm-hmm. continuing lesson is if the idea that there's going to be these 300 plus types, the Maurice Jones-Drews, the guys that pile up, or DeMarco Murray maybe in recent years in mm-hmm. his final season in Dallas. These totals, I don't see them. It's kind of an interesting mix. I think partly we're throwing to these running backs more. Todd mm-hmm. Gurley being a classic example. I think his touches were probably way up, but carries mm-hmm. weren't.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Ezekiel Elliott averaged 24.2 carries per game. Le'Veon Bell was 21.4. Leonard Fournette was 20.6. So, I mean, you don't get a ton of guys who have this sort of workload to get there or get close to it. And then, those guys have to stay healthy, and Zeke got suspended. Le'Veon Bell skipped weeks. He was the only guy who did it. He skipped week 17. Leonard Fournette missed 3 games with injury and was not 100% for a couple more. I mean, so it's just tough to get all those things in your favor to get to 300 carries, and have 3 guys do that is just might not happen in this league for a while.
Just to cap the point, I mean, in terms of these usages, I don't think Alvin Kamara is a great player. I don't think he's a unicorn in terms of his ability to catch the ball. We've seen mm-hmm. this going back to LT. There are running backs that have been good. But, like, Alvin Kamara had 120 carries. He had 81 receptions. Mm-hmm. So you can get your volume in different ways. I just think that, we're going to continue to see that. If it's 300, fade it, man.
I agree. And
all right,
speaking
again,
of,
we're doing well.
Speaking of backs with a history of 300 carries, Adrian Peterson, over under 10.5 rushing touchdowns.
I think I got this way wrong, and I would like to point out that, you know, my reference there to Alvin Kamara is part of it.
Yes, you said under, so you got it. Your memory is wrong, but your prop was correct.
Yeah, 10.5. I think the prop, as I recall, we have said we put that number, I think, relatively high because yeah. Adrian Peterson has hit that before, and Adrian Peterson has also come back remarkably well from injury before. We were hearing a lot of good things. Obviously, he was just beat out by superior talent. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the reality, superior juice at the time. If I recall, I don't think he was traded to Arizona and put up 15 rushing touchdowns.
No, he did not. He got to 2 was his total for the year, which I thought it'd be
so
more than 2.
They're not going to cut David Johnson. Yeah,
okay. They're not going to cut David Johnson. That's accurate. So you are 4-0 so far in your props. I'm 2-2. And
so it can only get worse.
Damn. Well, next one, I think you are going to remember this one accurately. It's Leonard Fournette plus 99.5 rushing yards, DeMarco Murray.
Oh, man. I got to think here. Plus 99.5 rushing yards. I think so, I faded DeMarco Murray mm-hmm. because I thought Derrick Henry would soak up more of the volume there.
That's what I said. I said there could be a situation where Murray is the second back in Tennessee by the end of the year. And you agree. We both took Fournette, so we both won that one. And, of course, he averaged the he had 1,040 yards to DeMarco Murray, 659 yards. So a pretty easy victory there for the rookie Leonard Fournette. So we're on the same page, and you're 5-0. You got your first 5 props correct.
God, pull the plug on this show.
I have some bad news. I have some bad news for you. It's about to get a little worse. Next one.
I recall a certain Dalvin Cook prop that I threw out there that I'm dreading.
It's Dalvin Cook minus 49.5 rushing yards, Latavius Murray.
I was absolutely certain that Dalvin Cook was going to soak up first team carries, and through 4 games, though he was injured in his 4th game, I believe against the Lions, mm-hmm. through 4 games, Dalvin Cook was pacing for 1,416 yards by my dead precise calculations, Bill. Mm-hmm. And as we know, what happens over 4 games is certain to happen over 16 games. That's just a rule. So I like where I was at. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. my confidence in Dalvin probably got him injured. Kind of a non-contact ACL, if I recall. And down goes Dalvin, and down goes my prop.
Fortunately so, we both took Dalvin Cook there and did not work out all that well. So we both lost that
one. So 5-0 with a single loss being, or you're 4-1, I'm 5-0, but with a single loss, clearly no fault of our own.
Oh, I'm 3-3. You're 5-1. I'm way behind.
Okay.
This was what you said was the Mina Kimes trolling portion of the prop bets. It was Russell Wilson plus 12.5 touchdown passes, Russell Wilson sacks.
Oh, man. I think he is not as great. My memory serves correctly, Russell Wilson is not as good as people tend to think at avoiding sacks.
True.
But he does throw a lot of touchdown passes.
Also true.
And he's just awesome for fantasy because I wish I would have included something on his rushing yardage total, possibly leading the Seahawks. That would have been a fun prop. I think I guessed that I did not troll Mina, and I guessed that he would,
You would take the touchdown passes side of this?
I would take the touchdown passes. But I don't think that came true.
Well, you are wrong on both counts because you picked sacks as opposed to touchdowns, and touchdowns came through. It was 34 touchdowns to 43 sacks. So I also recall
saying that, you know, his high season of touchdown passes, I mean, he really can throw a lot of touchdown passes.
Oh, I mean, just in the fourth quarter alone this year, I felt like he threw 34 touchdown passes.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, I think we're going to be, you know, as long as he plays, we're going to debate just kind of how to scout him, what he does. Is he difficult to coordinate, or if he's easier to coordinate because he eliminates negative plays? I don't know. I think he's one of the most difficult players to evaluate I don't know, ever. And perfect point here, because I can't remember exactly how I lined up the prop, and I certainly got it wrong. Or I got it right. But
no one's going to judge you. No one's going to judge you, let alone me. I said the same thing. I said Sacks and lost. This is the one, the Browns bet I think you're thinking of, but there's another one later on, which is Patriots win total plus a half. The combined win total of the teams who will pick 1 through 4 in the draft this year.
I am absolutely certain I said that a 1-15 or 0-6 team is extremely rare. It's more common that the team picking first has somehow cobbled together 3 wins, hell, maybe even 4. Mm-hmm. And the Cleveland Browns 2016 dreadful version was a 1-win team that probably could have easily won 3 or 4 games based on,
that's true,
you know, just on totals. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely certain that the Cleveland Browns couldn't do worse than 1-15, given the additions, the good grades, not just in the draft, but free agency. Mm-hmm. And yet, they decided to go with a rookie quarterback for the bulk of the season, and it was an absolute nightmare.
Well, they, to be fair,
so I think I got this dead wrong because of the Cleveland Browns.
To be fair, at least they left that quarterback in and didn't bench him 5 or 6 times to ruin his confidence during the year. You did mention that. You mentioned you picked the 4 teams, as did I, and it was 13-11 Patriots because the Browns won 0 games, Giants won 3, and the Colts and Texans won 4. That is New Jackson coming for you now. He's so upset that he set off his own car alarm while you doubted his ability to lead men into the middle of the first round.
By the way, Bill, I get this. The whole idea of where this was I'm saying that I thought Cleveland would do better, that those 1 through 4 teams. Small shout out to the New England Patriots for the 98 season in a row, crushing, you know, any preseason totals that put them at 11.5 or 12.5. It's remarkable.
You remember when we were talking about this was August, the Patriots were projected, not by us, to go 16-0, and you said you were worried about where the sacks were going to come from, and they're closer to a 13-win team, and they're more vulnerable on defense than it might seem, which ended up being quite prescient in the long run.
They really were vulnerable on defense in the first 2 games, and then really, help me out here, Bill, but the Patriots were a dreadful defense that did a really good job in the red zone this year. Mm-hmm. And that was mass throughout, and then it was in the playoff. Even in the Super Bowl, they did a half-decent job in the red zone, but unfortunately, they gave up some big chunk touchdowns, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did not go well for them in the Super Bowl when it came to that defense, as we discussed very briefly earlier with Mike Reese. Now, next one, Pierre Garçon targets. Some of these, like, they're pretty easy to solve who won and lost the bet. It's more just, can you figure out which side he took? Pierre Garçon targets minus 39.5. Any other San Francisco player?
Now, man, this is tough. What a good prop. Did you write this one or did I write this one?
I don't remember, but I'm guessing it was you. I feel like it's a very solid.
I think I had it. I think I said that I was going to take the other players. I didn't think Pierre was going to lap the field that big, though he has before, because Shanahan would diversify the portfolio, so to speak.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you said. And we both chose the other side of this bet. I mentioned that Pierre Garçon had no history of being injured, but if you have a 39.5 target lead, you have to worry about a guy getting injured because that pretty much ruins your chances, and that's exactly what happened. Garçon got hurt. So he had 67. Marquise Goodwin finished with 105. So very interesting offense to see next year with Jimmy Garoppolo, a quarterback. Both won that one, so we got back on our winning streak after we both lost the previous 3. What about the...
None of the losses were our fault, again. That's Kaiser, true. Cook's injury, etc.
What about the Jets... The Jets opponent defense fantasy points. So basically the defensive fantasy points for every team playing the Jets this year, plus 2.5, the top fantasy defense's fantasy points.
I feel like I sided with the great Jets offense here, though I love this prop.
You did not. You sided with. You took the Jets' opponent's defense fantasy points. You said the Jets were going to be the worst. It'd be better to have the Jets. You said, quote unquote, "I'm going to go with my philosophy, the Jets bashing route."
You know what?
I said,
you know what? I'm actually positive now. As I was thinking, is I thought, and I don't know how I said this on the pod, but I really did think that the Jets were going to give the two backups, Petty and Hackenberg, a decent amount of reps because,
that was part of it.
But turns out Josh McCown is one of the better backup quarterbacks there is, so much so that he was actually a pretty good starting quarterback this year, kind of a top 20 guy in QBR, fabulous hair, as Mina likes to point out, and he's also woke. So it was really Josh McCown ruining everything, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah. I said, what if the Jets offense isn't as bad as it might seem like it's going to be? And then we both decided, we both predicted who would be the top fantasy defense in football by fantasy points. Do you know who you picked?
Top fantasy defense.
It was the Jags in real life, but you did not pick the Jags.
I did not pick the Jags. Perhaps the Vikings?
You did not pick the Vikings, my friend. Do you want to know who you picked? You picked the New York Giants to be the top fantasy defense.
Oh, the Giants
here. They finished 30th. I said the Eagles, so I'm happy with that one. They finished third, but neither of us got the Jags as the best.
The Giants is one of the biggest defensive drops ever. And the other thing is that, I think that obviously the big error there is Philadelphia's quarterback situation got a lot better than it had been, and. I don't think people realize how much of a struggle Carson Wentz's rookie season was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Kirk Cousins was good again. He didn't throw everybody the ball a lot.
To be fair,
this is a stupid pick.
This is ESPN standard scoring. If your league awards points for defensive backs suspended for games with no rhyme or reason, then maybe the Giants were a much better fantasy defense than it might have seemed. So we're almost halfway through. Let's talk about Ezekiel Elliott. We were doing this. This is a tough one because we were doing this during one of the brief periods where he was suspended early in the year. We said over under 999.5 rushing yards for Zeke.
Yeah, I think I took the over, assuming he would end up serving a suspension and then he would just soak up a ton of carries because they wouldn't be worried about usage. At least that sounds right in my semi-functional brain.
That's pretty much accurate. I think we both figured that he wasn't going to be suspended for as long. I think we were figuring maybe
he'd get
a four-game
suspension.
So we both picked the over. Of course, he went under. He had 983 rushing yards. So if it had been suspended, if he hadn't been suspended for six games, if it had been four or five, he would have probably got there.
You know what I blame, Bill? He didn't have as many eight Zeke holes.
That's
if you don't know what an 8Z Cole looks like, you need to follow Bill Barnwell on Twitter. That's at Bill Barnwell, everybody.
You're probably blocked if you are not following me already. I've already hit my peak audience. All right, Chris, we're going to get to some of those other props in a moment. First, I just wanted to talk about our sponsors here on the Bill Barnwell Show, Sunbasket. Now, I have to admit, I'm pretty lazy. It's the end of the football season, but during football season, I was not someone who was inclined to cook. I'm here or there, perhaps when I got a sunbasket delivered, I did cook, but usually I live in New York City. It's a great place to eat out. I'm working quite frequently. I wasn't in the mood to sit down and make a home-cooked meal, but it's easy. Not only is it easy, but now that I have the time to do it, I'm doing it all the time, and I'm doing it with the help of Sunbasket, because Sunbasket delivers meal prep kits right to your door, making healthy cooking, which I need after the football season, easy and convenient for any busy lifestyle. And of course, you're not going to get one meal delivered to you. You'll have no choice in the matter. That's not what Sunbasket does. Sunbasket uses organic and clean ingredients, and they give you 18 healthy options to choose from every week. So no matter what your lifestyle is, whether it's paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, family options, all kinds of different options for you to choose from when it comes to Sunbasket, something that's going to fit you and fit your family. So 18 different recipes per week you can choose from, like seared albacore tuna steaks with green beans and soft cooked eggs, or steaks with chimichurri, roasted sweet potatoes. You're going to get an option that you and your family are going to love. And of course, everything is pre-measured. Everything is easy to prep. You're going to require 30 minutes of your time, and you're going to get a home cooked meal, which I'm not going to lie, I probably had the time to do that during the season. But now that it's not the season, I'm going to indulge home cooked meals all the time. It's going to be great, and it's not going to take very long at all because I have Sunbasket's help. There's something for every healthy journey and every busy lifestyle. And right now, if you call today, but you can't call. It's the internet. Come on. You have to go to sunbasket.com/Barnwell. If you do that, go to my last name, sunbasket.com/Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. You'll get $35 off your first order. That's a good deal. That's going to be cheaper than going out to eat, not only when you have the regular Sunbasket subscription, but now with $35 off the first week, that's even better. So right now, go to sunbasket.com/Barnwell. Get some delicious, healthy home-cooked meals for you to make. Live that off-season lifestyle with me, sunbasket.com/Barnwell. All right, back again here on the show with Chris Sproul, and we are going over our preseason props. So far, I believe you are 6-5. I am 5-6, so still a lot to get to, even though you already know the outcome. I finish on a massive losing streak when it comes to the props. I think I get a lot of them wrong at the end, so you're safe. But what about this one here? I want to know what you think. You picked Brandon Cook's targets plus 20, Julian Edelman targets from 2016. So Edelman had 159 targets in 2016.
Yeah, so I feel like I wrote this one, and the point was is that as much as we talk about the Patriots offense really spreading things around, there have been extremely high target rates comparatively for Edelman in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to be wrong, and the problem is Edelman was just out immediately after this, so it's really hard to recall.
He was out before we recorded this.
Okay. Now I'm remembering it clearly. I'm going to say I thought Cooks could get to, what would he have to get to, 136 or something?
139 and a half.
139. No, I don't think Cooks is going to get there.
So you picked Edelman. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
No, yeah. You picked Cooks. And I picked
so Cooks. It was the Edelman injury, and I was saying, okay, yeah, Cooks is going to soak up that much volume now.
Yeah, and he did not. He got to 114, even though I said he'd get to 125 or 130 even with Edelman in the lineup. So I was totally wrong, and you were also wrong.
You were not totally wrong. I mean, I still think, in retrospect, Cooks was a big part of the offense. What I didn't realize was he was more, it was right out of the gate too. He was more of a downfield guy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that he would soak up a lot more intermediate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you told me that Edelman was going to miss the whole year, that Chris Hogan would be pretty much absent for half the year, that Gronk would miss a couple games, I would have said absolutely Brandon Cooks gets to 140 targets, but it did not work out that way.
This is just another case where when I asked Bill Belichick, mm-hmm, on a separate line exactly how he was going to use players, he was not completely transparent with me. It's really disappointing, and I'm going to call him.
It's very upsetting. Now, I will say your decision on this next prop was for quote-unquote pure entertainment purposes. So let that inform your thoughts about which side you took. Jets quarterback pick sixes plus 3.5 Tom Brady interceptions.
Okay, so I believe this is based out of the Jets with a remarkable number of pick sixes in the year prior.
No, they were the Rams, I believe.
Okay.
But it was just sort of like, you know, we figure the Jets are going to throw a lot of pick sixes.
I thought there would be a few wrong way runs, when it came to the Jets offense.
Mm-hmm.
I know, if I recall, mm-hmm, my whole philosophy was fade the Jets offense, thinking that, again, it would be the Hackenberg and Petty show.
Yes.
With McCown as the trusted advisor to that.
Correct.
Disaster. And instead it was the McCown show, and it was not that bad. So I'm certain I got it wrong. All hail Brady.
You did take the Jets. I took Brady. Do you know what the result of this prop was? Do you know how many pick sixes the Jets threw this year?
Off the top of my head.
Just a guess.
Let's say 3.
They didn't throw a single pick six all year.
Oh my gosh.
Zero.
How did I not know that they only throw, that they didn't throw any? Well, yeah, I guess McCown got all the reps.
Yeah, Brady threw eight picks. The Jets threw zero pick sixes, a couple fumble returns.
By the way, Brady's, that INT total for Brady is high for him. I mean,
relatively,
to the previous season. So he quadrupled his previous season total. But the Jets couldn't live up to their billing.
And still won MVP in the process. One more good Patriots bet we have to get to here. Rob Gronkowski receiving touchdowns, -1.5. Any other tight ends receiving touchdowns?
I think I went with the field here.
Mm-hmm. You did go with the field here. So did I. We were correct.
Not the field Yates, the field.
I listen, I think Field H put him out there in the right scheme. He's going to get in the end zone. He's a guy who just has a nose for the end zone there. You said we both got it right, and you're accurate. You said
I might have mentioned Hunter Henry as well, a guy who can.
You talked a lot about Hunter Henry, but then you said you wonder if Seattle will force the ball to Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
But,
so good.
But, and then after that, you said you also expect big things out of Eddie Lacy, so I can't let you get away with all the fish.
Hey, I had the tight end portion of this nailed, man.
You did. You had the Seattle ends. You knew one of those two guys was going to dominate in the Seattle red zone. But
I'm a huge Hunter Henry fan by virtue of the fact that he has a last name for a first name and a first name for a last name. So remember that.
Classic.
Big scouting note there.
One of our favorite teams to discuss, the Los Angeles Chargers. Phillip Rivers interceptions in the fourth quarter and overtime, -1.5. Chargers losses in 7 point games decided by 7 points or less.
So this is just like a pure Chargers trolling prop.
Yes.
Because Phillip Rivers, I believe in 2016, had a game where he threw four, or was it five, fourth quarter interceptions. His fourth quarter interceptions were painful, and like the image of him pulling his helmet off like halfway through his release to start yelling at a receiver for running the wrong way is like seared into my brain. I mean, if you watch a lot of football, as you should, Phillip Rivers with his helmet off yelling it's just kind of a part of Chargers football that is so special. I guess I would say I couldn't think it was possible that the Chargers could blow that many fourth quarter leads again. I don't know. I think that's where I was.
Well, you took Phillip Rivers. -1.5 for the interceptions, and it was a tie. It was 4-4. I took the 7 point game.
Gosh,
so
what a great prop. Was that yours or mine, Del?
I feel like that was mine.
Was yours. That is a really good prop.
I think a lot about Chargers.
Pure
props.
Troll.
Pure trolling Chargers. Next one. Tom Savage starts +1.5. Deshaun Watson starts.
I feel like, again, let's put out the disclaimer right now. This one was completely blown up by a freak injury. Non-contact ACL. Dalvin Cook.
I don't know if he knows this, Chris. It was not blown up. Deshaun Watson won this bet. So he had six. He started six
games.
He had
six.
And Tom Savage started seven. I forgot about this, and it just happened. TJ Yates started three games for the Texans this year.
What the hell is going on with TJ Yates? That guy's going to be playing football in 20 years somewhere.
He is.
I'm just trying to remember what side I got. I don't know. Maybe, again, I'm probably remembering it wrong. Now I'm definitely biased in saying, given how much they gave up for Watson, moving up to 11 to get him, that they were going to play him, then I'm doing the Princess Bride thing. I can't take the cup in front of you or me because I also think that they were going to stick with Savage because the defense was going to be really good and not everybody completely injured, which is what happened, aside from Clowney. Oh, man. I guess I'll say I thought Watson was going to get his starts.
You did. You said Savage was bad. And that was a correct read. So you both
Where
got that
you?
One correct. I was with you. I had nightmares on Tom Savage. Next one, though, we had different opinions on. J.J. Watt, -1.5 sacks. Versus the combined sack totals of Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus.
I'm pretty sure I took I thought Merciless and Clowney could actually beat him out in sack totals. I thought Clowney could beat him straight up in sack totals. I just think, sorry, this is going to sound bad. Congratulations, by the way, J.J. Watt, Walter Payton, Man of the Year. Best citizen on the planet right now.
The most important, important award in football, that Jim Nance would say.
Right. what a man. I'm pretty sure I was fading Watt's health then and will probably do so forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You said pretty much that word for word. I picked J.J. Watt because I said, well, what if Jadeveon Clowney gets hurt? And as it turned out, he was the one guy who didn't get injured. I said, quote unquote, I feel very confident about this one. And the result, of course, ended up being Clowney and Merciless 10.5, J.J. Watt 0. We have two, I lied, we have two Browns prop bets left to go. This one I like, and I was very upset that I had to find out what I suggested. Mike Glennon starts plus a half Cleveland Browns victories.
I'm really worried that I'm going to say that we need to stop bashing Mike Glennon and that he might perform reasonably well. People like John Gruden, I'm blaming, former ESPN employees, got into my head about the possibility that Glennon could play to what was his one good season in Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
He had 19 TDs, 9 picks, something like that. I'm going to say, I was way off because it was something involving the Browns not being a tire fire. I'm pretty sure I sided with Glennon here, and, go ahead and hit me with a shovel.
That would win. That was the winner. Glennon was the right side of this bet. He won 4-0.
Yeah, because that's the thing. The Browns actually were so bad. Oh, man, this is really a tricky one in reverse.
But you took the Browns.
Because you're basically talking about two of the worst stories that didn't involve injuries of the 2017 NFL season.
I mean, the Browns were injured, just an emotionally injured, different sort of injury. You took the Browns.
The fans are injured.
I took the Browns as well. We both got this one wrong. Are you ready for the saddest bet, the saddest prop bet of all time?
I'm really glad we get to reward people who are still on with the saddest bet, but I'm thoroughly entertained.
Yeah.
These were some pretty good props now that I recall.
We'll definitely do it again next year.
I'm already starting to write them for next season.
Right.
I'm really a big fan of just a prop that trolls multiple situations. That's really my sweet spot.
I think this qualifies multiple situations.
All right.
Terrell Pryor receiving yards. Minus 49.5, Kenny Britt receiving yards.
Oh, man.
No winners in this one.
Yeah, as my colleague Tim Kavanaugh likes to point out, the Alien Predator versus Predator trailer said, no matter who wins, we all lose.
Yes.
I think everybody here lost, including us.
That's fair.
I suspect that I thought...
Can I give you a hint?
Pryor might not be so bad, and Pryor might win this one.
Can I give you a hint? You said the words, if Corey Coleman is healthy.
Corey Coleman is a wide receiver who I really like, who has this bit of kryptonite that is really peculiar to the position of wide receiver, because wide receivers need to use their hands, and when he catches the ball, it breaks his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's bad. But Kenny Britt also ended up with the almost world champion New England Patriots. So
yes.
Who the hell knows?
So Kenny Britt won this one 256 to 240. Terrell Pryor did not cover his 49.5 yard difference. We spent a lot of time talking about how Terrell Pryor could break out in Washington, how Kenny Britt was underrated. You picked Terrell Pryor, so you lost. I don't think I even made a pick, which I'm counting that as a loss for me as well. But I think I think
you win by looking at it and thinking both situation is potentially so pitiful that you refuse to participate. Which is, this is kind of like writer Bill. Like if I said, hey, Bill, we really need you to compare Kenny Britt and Terrell Pryor, you would probably turn down the opportunity to write 3,000 words.
That's correct.
And you would be correct.
Yes. Two more to go. Marshawn Lynch rushing yards. Minus 99. Minus 99.5. All the other Raiders running backs yards.
I think I was Team Marshawn. Hashtag, excuse me. And, oof.
You're correct. That is exactly what you said. You said that you were very
I thought a year off would be good. Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't good. He had 891 yards, but Jalen Richard at 275, DeAndre Washington at 135, Jameson Olawale had 15, so 891 to 471. You chose Lynch. I chose the other backs, and a loss for me. I'm on a four prop losing streak.
Bill, what was your reasoning? I think you was it that you were fading Lynch more, or you actually kind of liked Washington and Richard and like the possibility that he'd go just more with a three and a half headed monster there.
I like Richard and Washington. I felt like chances of Lynch getting hurt were bigger than perhaps people were suggesting, but it didn't work out right that way. Richard's fine. Washington was pretty much a disaster, and Lynch wasn't great, but he stayed healthy and stayed on the field. So that's a L for me. Now, one more left. Final prop. You have a unassailable lead right now. You're up 10-9, but I do not win this one, so you end up winning our prop competition. I said the league interception leader, whoever it was, would be over or under 7.5 picks.
I think I could predict yours.
What did I say?
I think you would have said under.
Correct.
And
it was over.
Well,
by the end of the year.
Regression. I guess I'll go out and say it could be over, mm-hmm. just because I'm trying to remember if I said it was like the AFC West where the quarterbacks
might
throw
900
picks.
You said the AFC
East. Excuse me. Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. I remember. So again, this was going back to my theory that Hackenberg and Petty were going to play a bunch of football games.
Correct.
Tannehill was going to be there. I really thought, you know, the interesting thing is that Tyrod Taylor does an exceptional job of avoiding interceptions.
Right. We already had that Peterman was going to come in.
We had a suspicion that Peterman was going to come in, and basically Peterman within like 20 minutes threw enough picks for the season, but he did it in the AFC West, which is a shame. Again, the stupidity of the Jets quarterback situation, or how I was reading it, is my downside here, is my kryptonite.
Yes. So you picked Marcus Peters as your most likely player to finish with more than 7.5 picks. I picked Malcolm Butler. so I was not correct. You were closer. But, of course, Kevin Byard of the Titans and Darius Slay of Detroit both finished with 8 picks top our final prop.
And as I recall, in a Barnwell special, I believe you tried to show the randomness of picks at some point by using our friend Mr. Byard in Tennessee, and by sometimes how the ball just like randomly stuck into his face mask.
No, the thing is, I don't watch any of the games. So if I just watched the games, I would know that he happened to be in the right place at the right time, even though the right place just happened to be playing cover two and having a ball just drop in his hand.
Just crunching the numbers, yes.
So who knows? We will see what happens next year. Of course, Kevin Byard probably going to have 8 picks. We'll make that a prop on our board next year. But we're going to come back with these in August. We'll do another set of these because they're very fun to do. So, Mr. Sproul, I don't think you have anything to plug. Do you want to plug anything?
I just want to plug at Bill Barnwell where he...
You're also on Twitter, though.
At Sproul ESPN, yeah. But come on. That's usually just retweets of your articles and all our many other fabulous NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB writers, you name it.
There's a dog mask
podcast
out here.
Producers,
podcast, and any ESPN employees are likely to get a retweet. You did retweet a photo of the beverages menu at the Super Bowl where
that's my special.
The specialty was $14 for a can, so a 6-pack would get you to $102.
$17, I believe. The 14 was domestic. 17,
oh, sorry.
So. You know what? The funny thing is cool. The interesting thing is the Super Bowl in the press box as that game ended, I still had beer touch me and I was easily 15 feet above any fan. It was splashing that high. And I was also catching the drift of something that wasn't alcohol, but is often coupled with it. So it was quite a scene down there.
Interesting. So you smelled buffalo wings from the press box. Interesting. All right. Well, Mr. Sproul, of course, always a pleasure to have you on. We will have you back on in August to do more preseason props, but thanks so much.
Yeah, somebody's going to sponsor that sucker for a couple mil. Easy. Call our agents.
All right, thanks so much to our guests today from ESPN, Mike Reese and Chris Sproul. Of course, we're going to have more audio coming to you next week. Don't know what it's going to be about yet. I have to admit, I was not necessarily thinking this was going to be a football show, and then football broke. So we'll see if there's more football news breaking. We'll do that. But, of course, plenty of other things to get to in the sports world. So more Bill Barnwell Show coming to you next week.